Okay, so this is like a C tutorial for people who haven't seen C before. So let's see, how many of you just came straight out of 61A? I guess most people. So how many people only know Scheme? Okay, all right, so hopefully this will be helpful. Okay, so in most programming languages, okay, so can you guys hear me in the back? Yes? Okay. So in most programming languages, we usually start off by writing a program that just prints "Hello World" to the screen because it usually demonstrates a number of things about how to use the program. So this is what "Hello World" looks like in C. So if you haven't seen this before, we'll break it down into pieces. So I have no laser pointer. So this first part where it says include brackets stdio.h. So that's what that's doing is this special set of strings, the special words that pound include in C. It tells the C compiler to look for the file that's named in these brackets and include the contents of that file in the file where you wrote include. And generally, you do this because writing one giant C file is not very easy to maintain when you move on to larger projects. You also do it because some of these common library functions are included in standard header files. So you include them, such as like standard IO, standard lib, math.h. They provide useful functions that a lot of people use. So it makes it easy to reuse code. So I guess a little bit of like there's a lot of details in C, so like the first detail I want to point out is that in include these angle brackets that looks in like a system-defined place, usually like the standard library, and if you use quotation marks, it looks in the current directory wherever you're compiling from. So if you are wondering about like the differences, that's what it is. Yeah. Any questions about include? Forgot. Question?
So, two things. What is stdio?
Okay, so some of these common libraries we'll talk about like common operations, but standard IO deals with input output. That's what IO usually stands for. Standard lib just contains like a whole bunch of like really standardly used things, like string comparison stuff. Actually, I'm not sure what else is in standard lib, but that's what I usually use out of it. Math.h, that's pretty self-explanatory. A lot of math functions in there.
Includes the library and another file includes that file. Does it include the first file?
I don't believe that it works that way. Generally, when you're trying to like do cascading things like that, you have to be care. It may work like that. I don't exactly remember. I just know that when you're trying to do cascading includes, you often have to be careful about circular includes. So I guess it would include it because circular includes will cause your compiler to like go in a circular loop and like so file A tries to include file B, which tries to include file A, and then it just goes in a loop forever, and then your computer crashes and it doesn't work. So there's ways to prevent that. I don't think I'll talk about it here because it shouldn't come up, but it's something to be careful of.
Well, what's a header file?
A header file. So a header file really isn't any. It has the same syntax as a C file. Generally, use a .h. Suffix to say that this file contains no code. It only contains declarations. So you declare that in this header file that these functions can be called somewhere, but you don't provide the code for these functions. Does that make sense? It's like saying like this header file just tells standard IO tells you of the existence of the function like get char or write to file, but the actual code for these functions does not live in the header file. You do that because you don't want to have every file include all of the code for these commonly used functions, be it that just make all your executables too big. But by just including the function declaration, you let the users use the functions without having the code. All right. So that's the include part. So the next part of this hello world is like we have this int main and then some cryptic arguments and then some code inside. So The main function is the only special function in C. It's where all program execution starts. So if you try to compile a C file without a main, you can't make a working executable out of that. So int main, so these arguments that are passed in are automatically done so when you run the executable from the command line. So argc will tell you how many arguments, and this array of char stars, a char star is roughly equivalent to a string in other languages, so it'll contain all of the words that you typed in as the arguments. Let's see. Yeah, so pretty much most C files you write will have a main function because you want them to be able to run, and without the main function, they can't run. And that, at that point, you're just writing like a library for somebody else to use.
Yeah.
Char star is roughly equivalent to a string for other languages. It's not quite a string. C does not have a string type. It does have a string type, but it's defined in an external library. It does not have like a native string type. There's very few types included by default in C.
Isn't star supposed to be there when you want to go to pointers addresses?
Yeah, so we'll get to pointers later. A char star is a string because it's a pointer to a character, but a pointer can also be an array, but we'll go into that. It's one of the many confusing things about C. Yes?
In lecture, it's either just the star or the bracket by the two
variables. Sorry. In the lecture, the what?
Like, RB, like in class,
yeah.
Or arrays, it's just with the brackets without the stars. Like, why is there a star in here?
Is it lecture in the lab, there was no star.
There was no star, really? Really? If that's the case, then something's wrong somewhere, I guess. I mean, you can have more than one argument. If you only had a single array of characters, that'd be like one argument.
One letter?
Or like an array of characters, so you can have lots of letters, but it'd be only be one set of, one string of letters.
It wouldn't. Yeah,
you wouldn't be able to have separate strings in that array. So I guess I'll take another look at the lecture slides.
Maybe it wasn't a hello world.
There's a star on the lecture slide.
There is a star? Yeah, so there should be a star. Without a star, it's not like a valid main. Like, int main has to be defined this way, exactly, or without these arguments in the middle. Those are the only two valid ways to define main. If you define main any other way, it won't be recognized as a special function that where execution starts. I don't think you need to name them that, but by convention, like, everybody names them that, so there's no reason not to name them that, really.
So the character can be a pointer?
We'll get to that, so.
I thought it's supposed, if it was an at sign, it's supposed to be an integer, right?
We'll get to pointers later, so. There's actually quite a few slides. Okay, so other line that we saw in the Hello World example is printf. So programs can't really do anything without interacting with the user, right? So printf is your general output function in C. If you've seen other languages, like in Java, it'd be system.out.print. If you've seen Scheme, it'd be Scheme doesn't really have a print function because everything just outputs already. So does Scheme have a print function?
Display?
Okay, so Scheme does have a print function. So this is roughly equivalent to display, but it's also a lot more powerful, I think. So printf, the first argument will be a string in double quotes that can just be something on a printout. Like, so in our first example, we just said printf hello world.
How about recommendation?
Yeah.
I think it might be useful if you just wrote that on the board instead of having to refer back to a thread thing.
Okay, well, we're not gonna stay with this example for that much longer. So, and then you can insert additional arguments after the first format string. And these get placed into the format string. So this might be something you haven't seen before. So I have some examples here. The green text is what would be printed out if you ran the program. And the black is our actual code. So we just said printf, hello world. It prints hello world. If we include the special character, %d, that means that tells printf to expect one more argument and to print that argument as a decimal integer. And so this 5 will get placed where the %d is, and then this will get printed out. So, and then just similar codes for a character and a floating point number, %c and %f. So you can see what the output is here. Another thing to note is that printf doesn't give you a new line by default. So if you execute these two lines one after another, it'll just print the first print what you said at first, so no new line, and then the second printf just continues where the first one left off. So there's no new line, but if you want to print a new line, there are other special characters, slash n, for new line, and then that would print your two words on different lines.
You yeah. Dash n.
The what?
It's dash n.
It's slash n. Right. Yeah.
What if you replace percentage d with just 5?
We replace this with 5.
Yeah.
Then we wouldn't need this argument, and then it would still print the same thing, but. Like this 5, usually we don't put just a 5 there. We can put a variable.
Okay.
So then it'll print out the value of the variable.
You get an error if you include the %d and don't provide another argument?
Yes. Yeah, there's like a lot of these details. But you shouldn't need to memorize these details. If you need to know like what's the special character for a what's the special instruction to include a character, you should look that up. If you want to know, like, how do I print a new line, you should look that up, things like that. Yeah.
You know, in Java, when you put things in quotes, right, they're like a string.
Yeah.
Is that different in C?
No, so it's the same in C. If you put things inside double quotes, they're also a string in C. All right, so that's our bait. So that pretty much explains the basic hello world. So we have include, where we can include standard libraries to do that provide us with extra functions. We have the main function where execution starts, and then we have our standard output function, which is printf, to display things to the console. All right, and then
quick question: if you hadn't
yeah.
put those quotes around the A, what would it have printed?
Here?
As a character, what if you didn't do that?
If you didn't do that, then the A would be interpreted as a variable name. And then it would try to look up the value of the variable A. If there was no A defined, then it would complain at you. Otherwise, it would just print a value. Okay, so next thing we should cover is variables. So in Scheme, you kind of had variables. Like you could define some string to have a certain value, right? You'd like define f to be 5 or something. So in C, you still have this concept of like storing a value, giving a name to some value, but you're a lot more restricted. So each variable you have to say I want a on a variable named C before you can store anything to it. So in Scheme, you just say, like, define f to be 5. You didn't have to say, oh, I want a variable named f, and then now I want it to be 5. In C, you have to do both of those steps before you can get a variable with the value 5. And also, every variable has to have a type. So in Scheme, you can say, like, define f to be 5, and later say, define f to be the list 5 with 5 in it. So f does not have a specific type. In C, every variable has a specific type. So if I say, here I declare an integer called int1, and then, so inside this variable called int1, I can only store integers. If I try to store a character into it or a double, the compiler will either give me a warning or not let me do it at all if it's if it can't convert between the types. Any questions about variables? Yeah?
So when do we use the hash define construction?
When do we use the what? Sorry?
There's a hash define kind of construction.
Oh, like pound define?
Yeah. Like hash define
Int. So something that looks like.
Yeah,
and five, something like that.
Yeah.
That's. It is a valid thing to do. It's that's actually not really C code. So anything with a pound before is handled by the C preprocessor. So what that means, like, it's not compiled code. So before the code is compiled, it'll the pre-compiler will go through the code and look for special constructs like pound include, pound define, and then. So in the case of pound define, what that says, like, anytime I see an n inside my program, replace it with a 5. And just like some rules for like where you can look for n. So if you type like a string n, double quote n, 5, that n won't get replaced. But if other somewhere else you said like n plus 3, it'll go through and just replace n with 5 before you compile. So it's not the same as having a variable. Like you can't change a value of n in this case. But pound defines are useful. Like the use of pound defines is using pound defines, you can do a lot of powerful things, but it's not something we expect you to know how to do for this class. We might use it in a code that we provide to you, but you shouldn't need to. You don't have to do it yourself. If you know how to use it, you can do some pretty cool things. Okay, so let's see. Yeah, so another point thing to point out is that variables in C, when you declare them, they don't have an initial value. So they have whatever value that chunk piece of memory that was given to them happened to have before you declared that chunk of memory to be that variable. So what that means, like, after I declare this int 1, there's a piece of memory that's been marked. This piece of memory is int 1. But we don't put any initial value in it. So whatever happened to be in that chunk of memory is what value int 1 will have. So if after this line, if I said print out int 1, I could get anything. So in C, it's a good idea to give your variables initial values before you work with them, or else you get strange and mysterious bugs that aren't reproducible, and they're not fun to find. Okay, so kind of tying into this, there are certain words that you can't use for variable names in C. So this is a list of all the C keywords. You can find a list of them online anywhere. So these words are specials. The compiler looks at, recognizes them separately, and it won't allow you to name anything with the same name. Yeah. Okay. So other basic things we can do, mass. Mass should work pretty much the same way you expect it to work. But a couple of things to note is that there's operator precedence. So in this line we have here, we have x plus y times y. So as we expect, we know that multiplication happens before addition. So this does a correct thing and does y times y and then adds x. And I lost my mouse. So you can also, if you're not sure which operator comes first, you can always put parentheses around the things you want to happen first. So in this case, I could have put parentheses around this y, and it would have done the same thing. Other thing to note is that in C, what value you get after you divide depends on the type of the variable you're dividing. So this is different from scheme where you did 5 divided by 3, it would give you like the exact like 5/3. But here, if you divide 5 by 3 as integers, it'll give you 1, because integer division in C truncates. So 5 divided by 3 is like 1.67-ish, and then it cuts off the decimal and gives you 1. This is often a source of problems. Let's see, what else did I want to say? So,
do you only have to declare one of them to be a double? So if you had said x divided by double y, would that have been okay?
Yes, that's also okay. So whenever you're dividing, it'll look at the types of your two variables and bump them up to the next, to like the higher like precision one. So an integer divided by a double, it'll promote the integer to a double before dividing it, and vice versa, like double divided by integer.
Same
thing with multiplication. Seeing here is like, if you want this whole thing to be double, it's good to cast early. Like if we had written out like x divided by y times z times a times b, and then we cast at the very end, it'll do all the operations first before that as integer. And then it'll do the last one as a double division. And then you probably won't get what you want. Yeah. That's a good question. That's because I changed these slides repeatedly trying to find good numbers, and I did not update that part of the slide. So I should actually change that. D is 0. Yeah. OK, now I do not have arithmetic errors. OK, something that you might not have seen coming from Scheme is bitwise operators. So we've talked about bits a lot in class. So you should know like numbers, everything in like the programming world is represented with bits. And in C, you can work with the bits directly. So we have 6 bitwise operators available to us in C, the AND, OR, the exclusive OR, left shift, right shift, and bitwise complement. So in our examples here, like bitwise AND basically takes two values with the same bit length and compares their bits one by one. So we look at the first bit was the first bit, and 1 and 1 is 1. Like true and true is true. And then next bit, 0 and 1 is false. So we get a 0, and then et cetera for all the other bits. And then bitwise OR and bitwise exclusive OR work the same way. The next two, the left shift and the right shift, basically just move your bits over. So here we have this bit pattern. If we move it 3 bits to the left, what that means is like we fill in 3 zeros on the right and then chop off 3 zeros from the left. So this one moves over, and then we fill in with zeros. Yeah.
Is a byte 4 bits?
What's a byte? A byte is 8 bits. So these are 1-byte numbers we're working with here. And then the left shift, it also moves the bits over, but whether it fills in with zeros or ones is, there's a little bit of technicality there. I'm not sure if that's important for your assignments yet, but the rule is that if the number that you're shifting over, if you're interpreting that as an unsigned number, it'll always fill in with zeros. But if it's a signed number, it'll fill in with whatever the top bit is. So then that's because if it's a signed number and you fill in with zeros, then you'll go from negatives to like positives by filling in with zeros, and then that's something that we don't want. Yeah. Any questions about bitwise operators?
Just a quick one. The leftmost one where you did the AND, if you change that to a NOR, it would be all ones with the very last one, correct?
A NOR. What do you mean?
Or is the complement of AND?
Yes, there is no bitwise NOR, however, in C.
What's the XOR?
Oh, the exclusive OR, yeah. Exclusive OR means that one or the other can be true, but not both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, and then the last one, bitwise complement, you just take all your bits and you flip them. So that's probably the easiest one, which is one to remember. Yeah. Shifts are useful. They're a quick way to multiply by two, shifting an unsigned number over to the that way. To the left by one, multiplied by two, assuming that you don't overflow the value, and then similarly shifting over to the right by one, divides by two. So. Normally, multiplication is a lot slower than like just shifting the bits by one. So that's a quick way to multiply, divide by two, or any power of two. Another reason might be if you wanted to turn off certain bits, turn on or off certain bits, you can do that with bitwise ands. So like in my example here, like all the bits up here are zeros. So when I do a bitwise AND, it's guaranteed that those top six bits will be zero after I'm done. The bottom bits being one just means that it'll preserve whatever was there in your other number. So if we have a zero there, zero and one gives you zero. If we have one there, one and one gives you one. So you can use bit shifts to move groups of ones where you want them to turn off on or off certain bits.
If you want the binary.
Oh yeah.
If you do like 512, like that'll work. Right?
Yeah, that'll work. But you have to remember that you're anding their bitwise, their bit representations.
Yeah. What type of bitwise will they be like ones complement? How do you know if they'll be ones complement, twos complement, or whatever?
Whenever you type a number in Scheme, I'm pretty sure it's it's in C. It's going to be a signed integer. So, and all signed integers in C are two's complement. Was there a question in the back?
So, you have two numbers 0001 and 1111. Which of those corresponds to not the bottom, like the right shift?
Oh, here?
Yeah, which one corresponds to signed?
So, this would correspond to the signed. If this value here, was a signed number, then when we move it over, we fill in with whatever the top bit was. And in this case, the top bit was already a 1, so we fill in with 1s. If this number was supposed to be an unsigned number, then it'll fill in with 0, then we would get that. All right. So something that we don't have in Scheme that we have in C are arrays. So an array is a way to store a bunch of values of the same type close to each other in memory. And it's also a way to kind of group them together so you don't have to give each one a different name. So in this example, we declare an array of size 10. So if we didn't have arrays, we'd have to give a variable name to each element of this array. And then accessing them would be really difficult to do in loops. But since we have arrays, we can do this. So declaring an array, you give the type that the array should hold, and then the name of the array, and then in brackets, the size of the array. And then to access an array, you use the array the name of the array, and then in brackets, the element you want to access. And arrays are indexed from 0. I think that's the same in Scheme. So that shouldn't be a difference you have to worry about. Yes?
Do you know why you want the arrays to be indexed to each other in the memory? Because if you have a big array, you need a big piece of memory to put that. So why even does it matter that they want them to be
Partly because when they design it, like, you get better performance that way. Also because what's happening when you access an array, like, when I say array, say I want the ninth element of array, that means I go to the location in memory where the first element is stored, and I count down nine, and I go down by nine of whatever I'm storing, and then I give you that. So if they weren't contiguous, then you couldn't do that. And then doing arrays would be a lot more complicated.
So if they wanted to give each of the array members an address, it was going to be harder to access them?
Yeah, like if you want to split an array in like different pieces of memory, that'd be incredibly difficult to do in hardware. Yeah.
So at the bottom there, it says it sets the first element to zero. Does that mean?
Yes, that should also be three.
In lecture, he says that, so if you have an array, they'll be stored at markers of four?
Yes. Yeah, so that's also true. That's more of like a hardware, that's more hardware specific. You could build hardware that doesn't store them on multiples of four, but
four bytes.
Yeah, but that's how it works in most architectures we work with.
So integers have
integers
bits?
No, integers are 4 bytes, and each byte is 8 bits.
Okay.
So integers are 32 bits. Yes. It depends. So memory that we work with is byte addressed, but if we told you that memory was like bit addressed or word addressed or something, then when you increment by one, you increment by whatever your unit is. And right now we're telling that one unit is 1 byte. But on like a midterm question, we could say, here's memory and it is word addressed. So that means every time we go up by one, we jump over by 32 bits, then you should know, still know what to do.
Okay, so it depends.
Yeah.
What is
32 bits? So right now, so the architecture that we're teaching you is byte addressed, or every time you increment an address by one, you go up by 8 bits.
So when they say word, how do
they use
that?
A word is 4 bytes or 32 bits. If it's a test question, we'll tell you. If it's like a midterm question, we'll tell you. Like, we're working with memory that's word addressed or byte addressed. In the real world, hopefully somebody tells you, or else you have to figure it out yourself. Yeah.
Okay. Say integers
are 32 bits. Yeah. Okay. So. Hopefully you've all seen control statements before, so if, else, while stuff. So this is like a quick run through of the syntax. So in C, we say if some predicate is true or not, so some statement that evaluates a true or false. And then if that true if that statement is true, C will run the code in the first block. And then this else is optional, but if you have an else, then they'll run here. You also have if and then else if and else's. So if you've seen ifs before, this is just like a review of the syntax. You also have a switch statement, which is designed to cut down on the number of lines you have to write for if else if. So you have some variable and you say switch C, and then it'll check each of the cases one by one and see if your variable equal the character A. If it does, then we execute this code. If it's not, then it checks the next case. The thing to note here is that once any case matches, it'll just keep on executing code. So if we don't have a break statement here, if our character C was B, then we'll print B, and then it'll also print B again. It'll print after B. Because it just executes this code and then it'll just keep on marching.
Wait, you said okay. If it's B.
Yeah. If
it'll print.
So it'll match this case and then it'll go execute this code. But since there's no break statement, it'll just keep on executing code. So that's just how it works. And then,
so each of those C, D.
Oh yeah, print, and then
it'll break it, D.
And then it'll print this, and it'll break here. And then there's a default for, you can include this, but it's optional. And this is what will happen. This is what happens if it doesn't match anything. Yeah.
The print in quotes B over N, does that just print B and then a whole new line N, or nothing?
Like a new line, yeah. So it could skip to the next line. Let's turn it back. It works for integers, characters. I don't remember if it works for doubles. But I'm pretty sure it's restricted. It works for at least integers and characters. Okay. We also have while loops. So at the beginning of each loop, we test some condition. If it's true, we keep on executing code inside here. So this would print print i0 and then i1 and then i2 up to i9. Since once i is 10, it'll break out of the loop. Then we have a similar thing for a for loop, this first part is code that's run once before you go into the loop. So here we're saying set j to its initial value of 0. This middle part is code that's our test code. We'll keep on going through the loop as long as this code is true. And then this last part is code that's executed at the end of each loop. So here we have code that increments j by 1 at the end of each loop.
If you were to call on j after that for loop, would it have the value 9?
Yeah. Yeah, since we declared, it would have the value 10 since we declared j outside the loop, so it retains its value.
What happens if you declare j inside the for loop?
Yeah, so if we said int j equals 0,
yeah.
So in the new standard C99, that works, and that restricts j to being a local variable only inside the for loop, so you can't use it outside the for loop. In older C, it won't let you do that at all.
So what do you recommend?
I recommend using the new one since we say you can use the new one, and that's what we use for this class. But it's also a question of style. I mean, if you like the older style.
How do we use the new one?
So you compile this to flag dash dash std equals C99. Yeah. It is ANSI by default, yes.
And why is there why is there a hyphen ANSI as well,
in options? I don't know then. They might have included that option just in case or something, I don't know. Also on instructional machines, GCC has been defined to be include the dash std equals C99 by default, so. If you log into one of the instructional servers, you'll have C99 by default.
So if you use this style and you compile with the new C, would that give an error in that case? Would that be a problem?
No. Yeah. So the new C is backwards compatible.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So moving on, a couple other statements you can use inside for and while loops. You can use say continue. Which means skip the rest of the lines inside this while loop and go to the end of the while loop and then test a predicate and then maybe start to loop over.
So continue says it exits the while loop.
No, so continue just says like skip these lines and then go back to the top of the while loop.
I see. And does it work for a for loop as well?
Yeah, it also works for a for loop. And then break means just break out of the while loop completely. And that would mean we would stop execution inside the while loop and we would start here. So this chunk of code only prints I reach 10. Since when I is less than 10, we skip the rest of the while loop, then we don't print this line. Okay, so other things you might want to use, so functions. You also had functions in scheme, right? So you can define functions. So in C, functions have to be defined. They need to have a name, and they have to have a return type. So the return type means the value that's returned by this function, what type does it have? Is it an integer or a character or some other thing? And if your function doesn't return what it says it should return, then the compiler will not compile your program. So other things that functions can also be declared and defined separately. So that goes back to the header files. Often you declare a function inside a header file, then define it somewhere else.
Wait, what did you say?
So you can declare a function separately from when you define it. So I think I'll have an example of it here. So if I just say int foo, then a semicolon, that defines a function called foo, but doesn't provide any code for it. But that just says there's a function out there somewhere that's called foo, and it returns an integer. And if you call it, it'll definitely return an integer. Then, but that also means that we have to provide the definition somewhere else. So we can declare it and then define it later.
Wait, you said something about header files.
Yeah, so often then we'll include this declaration inside a header file and then have another program include only the header file and then include the code in a separate file.
So that's how header files sort of work.
Yeah. Yeah, so the code has already been compiled somewhere else, and then it just links it in. And you'll learn more about like the whole compiling, how you link these files together in lecture. OK. So one thing to note is that all arguments are passed by value. So if we have a variable called x, and we pass x to a function, then like here. Like in this code, we define a variable called x, and our function called foo tries to set the value to be 10. But when we call foo of x, it makes a copy of x, and then gives that copy to our function. So when we change this value, then we're changing the copy, and it doesn't change the original. And I think Professor Garcia went over how to actually change a value with pointers today, right? Did you talk about pointers?
Yeah.
Yes? Yeah.
I thought you had said that every main, function has to have two arguments.
Oh, yeah, so those arguments are optional. Either you have to have both of them or not, or neither of them.
Oh.
If you don't need to use the arguments, then you don't have to type that. What do you mean in the header itself?
Like, you said to list the function name in the header, but you don't define it, but you define it at the end.
Yeah.
Like, what if you just declare and define it in the header?
Declare and define it in the header? Yeah, you could, but that's generally bad style. Most people don't do it.
Oh, why? Because the header isn't compiled?
The header is compiled, but kind of by convention, you don't include code in headers, generally.
Oh.
Like, you could, but generally, when you include a header, you're expected to be importing like very little code, like only just the function prototypes. So if you actually include a code in there, then it doesn't really break anything. But people don't do that.
You
didn't list it in the header. Then when people include your header, then they can't use your function because they don't know about it. Yeah, so you'll learn more about how all that works in later lectures.
Can we define data types?
Yeah, so I'll try to go faster. Okay, so pointers, we talked about that in lecture today. Pointer is a variable which points to some data in some other region of memory. And pointers are important because to do anything interesting in C, you need to use pointers. You also have pointers to pointers to pointers. So a pointer means that you have a variable which points to another variable, and you know what type of data you're pointing to. So you could be pointing to a type of data which is also a pointer. So here we have three integers, and then we declare two pointers to them, two pointers, and then using an ampersand, we say we get the address of x. So we can set make point p1 point to x. And then the star dereferences the pointer. So this should be familiar. And then gives, dereferences p1, which points to x. So dereferencing p1 gives you 1. Then that sets y to 1. And then you can set pointers equal to each other. So just copies the address over. So now p1 and p2 point to the same thing. And then now if you set p2, that points to x. So now x equals 4. Yeah, so these slides will be posted later. So using pointers, we can do a swap. So here's a failed swap that doesn't work. You're working with intermediate variables. But if you use pointers, then you dereference the pointer to get the value. Then you dereference the pointer again to actually go to where the variable is, then copy another value into it. OK, so structures, somebody asked about that. So C only provides so many basic data types, but you can use structures to organize your provide structure and organization to user-defined data. So the way that works is use the keyword struct, and then you give a name to your structure. So struct point consists of an integer called x and an integer called y. So the advantages of this is that you can include more than one data type inside a structure. And all the data inside your structure has a name. So here we declare, so the type we defined is a struct point. So here we define two variables of this type struct point. And then we can access the elements by using a dot. So we can say p1.x, p1.y. So if you've seen any language that's similar to Java, this should look pretty familiar. Otherwise, just remember that use a dot to access the members of a structure.
So struct point, that line struct point p1, p2.
Is it kind of like defining objects?
Yes, it's kind of, you can kind of think of a structure as like objects without functions, if that makes sense. So shortcuts we can do, generally like typing this like struct point, we don't like typing extra words. So we can define the struct point type to be the name point t or any other name. So now if we, after writing this line, we can say point t p3. That's equivalent to saying struct point p3. And then we can also use, as before, we can use user-defined types inside another structure. So this is how we build more complex data.
Is there scoping like Java, like
everything is public? Yeah, so there's no real scoping, because when you write lots of C files and you link them together, there's no like, what scope are you in? So you really have to be careful not to name things the same, which is why often a lot of C variables are given really strange names to try to avoid these collisions. Yeah. OK. So we can, once we've defined user-defined structures, we can make functions return user-defined data. We can pass them in as arguments. Basically, you're defining like a new data type that you can use anywhere else in your program. Did I already do that slide? I guess still. OK, so memory management. Already 8:30. Let's see, what else did I have? OK, so what would you guys rather see in like the last like 5-10 minutes? Do you want to do memory management, or like some useful data structures that you might have seen in Scheme but don't know how to do in C, or like input output? I feel we should do IO quickly. because you'll get a lot of like the memory management in a lecture probably Friday and next Monday. So IO, we already went over printf, that's how you print to the screen. So reading in characters, you can use get char, which returns you the value of the next character somebody presses on the keyboard. And there's another function that gives you an entire line. So you give it a buffer to read into, so an array of characters. And then the function get will put the data into your buffer. Yeah, so anything from when the user starts typing to when they hit enter, which is passed in as a new line character to your program. And then opening a file, you need to include standard io.h, again, to be able to use the file type. But you can declare a pointer to a file, and then set it equal to, you call a function called fopen, that opens the file called foo.bar. And this string tells you what permissions you have. So doing this will tell you that I can both read and write from this file. If you just include a R, then you can only read. If you only have a W, you can only write. So there's that. And then there's get C to read from a file, and put C to put a character into a file, and there's also, like similar, like f gets from a file, and then f write print f, I think, prints to a file. So you should look in your book to get the specifics. Any questions about files or IO? No. Okay. All right. So. Yeah, so you just call get char, and whenever the user prints, so then once you call that function, then C will just wait there until you enter some character. Then once you enter some character, it'll return that character to your program. Okay, so I guess that's it.